Sunday evening at the Golden Globe Awards, actor James Franco won the award for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy for the film The Disaster Artist, which is a fine bit of irony since Franco's film is critically acclaimed and based on the life of the man who created what many consider the worst film of all time, 2003's The Room.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hey, Johnny, what's up?
I have a problem with Lisa. She said that I hit her.
What? Well, did you?
No, it's not true. Don't even ask.
I used to know a girl. She had a dozen guys. One of them found out about it, beat her up so bad she ended up in a hospital on Guerrero Street.
What a story, Mark.
Yeah, you can say that again.
Dubbed the Citizen Kane of bad movies, The Room sits atop a mighty heap of gloriously bad celluloid. Bad movies that we love. From Plan 9 from Outer Space, to Reefer Madness, to Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, the sheer awfulness is irresistible. That's according to GLT's Psych Geeks, Eric Wesselman and Scott Jordan, from Illinois State University's Department of Psychology. Wesselman says watching bad movies compels us to share the experience, rather than watching alone.
If I did watch it by myself, I felt compelled to share it with others, right? I don't just want to lend it to someone and say, here, tell me what you thought. It's no, I want to sit here and experience
their reaction to the terribleness?
Yes, as well as our reaction synergistically.
My first experience with what I would call riffing, the whole Mystery Science Theater phenomenon, happened in the spring of 1980.
My God, you remember?
Oh, I do. It was very poignant. I had two or three groups of friends who hadn't played D&D together before. So we were bringing them together at my friend's house, and he had a huge sectional couch in his basement, and he had a VCR. And someone had rented Christopher Reeve's Superman. We put it on. And the next thing you know, within 10, 15, 20 minutes, we're riffing Superman.
Wait a minute, you're shouting back, but that's a good movie.
It's a fantastic movie to riff with a room of 18-year-old boys.
Okay.
But the point is, we had never experienced that before. Huh. We had never seen it modeled.
All right.
You weren't allowed to go to the theater and riff the movie while you were watching it.
Unless it was Rocky Horror Picture Show.
True, which was still more of a college campus underground type of activity,
right,
in the early 80s. Now it's contemporary culture, but then it was still seen as sort of a renegade or rebellious type of behavior. But my point is, we could only sit in my friend's basement and have that kind of weird fun we'd never had before because of the advent of the VCR. Once people could watch a movie as many times as they wanted to, movies became a different thing. Watching movies became a different thing. Like Eric said, he was a movie buff. I remember listening to Siskel and Ebert talk about the first time they realized they could watch The Godfather as many times as they wanted to, whenever they wanted to. And it's a completely different way of experiencing movies. So I think this ability to consume it over and over again gives rise to a culture of what I would call recursively consuming it, right? And that creates its own kind of culture. And then suddenly it becomes normalized. And now Eric's got his friends coming over every week to do this to movies, right? And it becomes a new form of social behavior.
And it's expanded because the internet has given us even more opportunities to find glorious badness out there. So what is the appeal? What need or desire do these films fulfill in us watching bad movies?
I think one aspect is this bonding. It's the social nature of it. I mean, it's collective hilarity, to use a phrase that a film theorist, Andrew Tudor, mentioned, that we get together and we laugh. And we know from some psychological literature that laughing to jokes at whatever bonds us to those who are around us.
Mm-hmm.
So it also doesn't just forge connections, but to some degree, for some people, it becomes an identity issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are fans of lots of things. You know, I'm a fan of this team, this band, this genre, right? There are some people who own the fact and they relish in the fact that I love badness, right?
So
whatever that is.
There's no more guilty pleasure. Remember, we used to refer to bad movies as guilty pleasures, but now we don't have to feel guilty about it because everyone's sharing the desire for, not everyone, but a lot of people are sharing the desire for bad movies.
Yeah. It's only a guilty pleasure if you feel guilty for enjoying it.
Right.
And not everybody does, right?
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's not the badness of the movie that we're enjoying. It's the riffing on it with our friends that we're enjoying. When I first saw Mystery Science Theater,
there is a horror beyond yours. And it's in there.
It's Pauly Shore.
Locked behind that door.
Beside which Carol Merrill is standing.
I didn't make the connection that that was a socially emergent from what I had been doing in my basement with my friends in the 80s. And what Mystery Science Theater revealed to me is, oh, we weren't the only ones that used our VCRs to do this. It must have been people all over. And then somebody said, hell, I'm going to make a movie out of this or a TV show out of this. And I, oh, there's a convergence here. And then for Mystery Science Theater to come back is another what I would call a recursion, right? So we all feel like we're part of something that's increasingly big. So instead of just me and my friends in the basement where we form an identity, we form an in-group about these movies, and all the other differences between us are ignored because we can focus on this, what's nicely, usually kind of disposable entertainment. No one gets hurt by us saying bad things about it. It's a safe way to, you know, maybe be a little mean.
Well, is there Schadenfreude attached to all of this?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And it's an interesting point about Mystery Science Theater that I'd not really thought about until thinking about it, getting ready for this interview, is that even if it's just me watching Mystery Science Theater, which now that it's streaming on Netflix, my productivity has taken a huge hit.
You're just collecting data.
Watching what some scholars call parasocial relationships, right? So we can connect with fictional characters. We can connect with people who are we'll never actually meet, so celebrities. We can feel connected to them. So I'm watching these people riff a film. I'm not in that space with them, but I still feel some of that bond as well. So even just watching MST3K by myself is para, in parentheses, a social experience.
There's sort of pseudo real-time riffing going on in podcasting. I contribute to a podcast called Sister Speak, and they will it's a group of women who will watch, for example, Walking Dead. They've been watching Walking Dead, and they'll analyze the show for an hour in their podcast, and then they'll read all the viewer email that comes in, and they start our listener email, and they start a whole conversation about the show. And Walking Dead has just gotten worse. And now they're hate watching.
Oh, no.
Well, some of them are. But they're sharing a culture of hate watching. It's just like riffing on a bad movie. And they're enjoying their company riffing on this bad. Now, they love Game of Thrones. So there's no, you know, hate watching of Game of Thrones. But it's just going to increasingly become real time. And then once it's part of how you're walking down the street, something will recurse on that. And it's not going away because people dig it. Right? People do it together. It's not going to stop.
There isn't a lot of empirical data on this phenomenon, but we found a couple papers, and they've identified...
Good segue.
Oh, thank you. I didn't plan it.
It was organic. It wasn't in the script. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So there, you know, not everybody loves bad movies, right? There's not a whole lot of clear idea about what sort of internal, intrinsic personality factors, if you will, that would lead us to that. But at least for those people who identify as loving bad movies, they have some motivations from that, right? And so there are some people who are just like, no, I don't want to do this.
Like it's a huge waste of time.
Exactly, right? And so they don't.
Yep.
Most people, at least in these data, who consume bad movies, they know they're bad, right? I mean, and that's the case, that they know that this is transgressing a boundary of what we would call good or quality. So they see it ironically, or they appreciate the, what was the phrase you used? The glorious badness, I think is what you said. Or they have it as a guilty pleasure, and they haven't quite reconciled. They haven't just owned the fact that they love the glorious badness.
Or they're watching it so that they can talk about it at the water cooler tomorrow, right? I remember being in sixth grade, asking my mom and dad if I could stay up and watch the ABC's Tuesday night movie. I think it was called Terror at 30,000 Feet.
The sacrifice. The child. No! Please! Perhaps we could offer it this.
You mean like voodoo? You want to offer the doll instead of...
My God, that's hideous.
I wanted to watch it because I knew that my friends at school would be talking about it the next day. So they let me stay up, and then nobody talked about it, right? So some things have to do with keeping up socially, right? Particularly now, Netflix, I suspect a lot of people are pulled into watching these because they find themselves left out of conversations when they go out for dinner, mm-hmm. when they're at lunch, when they're at work, because other people are going on and on about these shows that they're not watching. So
no, there's work in both sociology and cultural studies that talk about aspects of this, for lack of a better description, fan culture. I mean, this information, this the experiences that I've seen this, I know the details about that. That's cred. Right? Capital. You want to be the one who's seen the bad movie, and not just the bad movie once, but you've seen it 20 times. You can recite it by heart. You know intricate details about what went wrong in the production.
So we all agree that we love bad movies. Yeah. What's your favorite bad movie, Scott?
I have to say I love anything by Roland Emmerich. So Independence Day, Godzilla, Independence Day Resurgence.
Wait a minute, the Godzilla with Matthew Broderick?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
Absolutely love that movie.
Okay.
Oh, no, I've watched that movie with my family at least 5 times.
Eric, what about your favorite bad?
So I managed to pin myself down to 2, The Evil Dead.
And, right, with Bruce?
Bruce Campbell.
Campbell, that's
And we developed a love for Bruce Campbell from that, quotable lines.
Doesn't he have a restraining order against you?
No, actually. He probably does against several fans, but fortunately, I'm not one of those. The other one is one that's tied into MST3K, but this is one that I can watch either with the riffing or without, and that's Santa versus the Martians.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't have...
Or Santa conquers the Martians, maybe.
Santa Claus conquers the Martians. That has Pia Zadora in it.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it's horrific.
Hooray for Santa Claus. See, I remember the song.
There you go.
It's wonderful. It's just wonderful.
And just horrible.
Yes. Glorious badness.
That's Eric Wesselman and Scott Jordan, GLT's Psych Geeks. They're both professors of psychology at Illinois State University. I'm Laura Kennedy.